ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. सो वी रीडिंग टुडे फ्रॉम द सेवेंथ कैंटो चैप्टर 9 चैप्टर एंटाइटल प्रहलाद पैसिफाइज द लॉर्ड विथ प्रेयर्स टेक्स्ट नंबर 21. माया मना सृजति कर्ममयं बलिया कालेन चोदित गुणानुमतेन पुंसः चन्दोमयं यदजपित अजयार्पित सोदसारम् संसार चक्रमज कोतितरे त्वदन्यः Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O Lord, O Supreme Eternal, by expanding your plenary portion, you have created the subtle bodies of the living entities through the agency of your external energy, which is agitated by time. Thus the mind entraps the living entity in unlimited varieties of desires to be fulfilled by the Vedic directions of karma kanda, fruitive activity, and the 16 elements. Who can get free from this entanglement unless he takes shelter at your lotus feet? Purport. If the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everything, where is the question of being liberated? Where is the question of being liberated from material engagement to spiritual blissful life? Indeed, it is a fact that Krishna is the source of everything, as we understand from Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. All the activities in both the spiritual and material world are certainly conducted by the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the agency of either the material or spiritual nature. As further confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.10, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sa Characharam. Without the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, material nature cannot do anything. It cannot act independently. Therefore, in the beginning, the living entity wanted to enjoy the material nature, and to give the living entity all facility, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, created this material world and gave the living entity the facility to concoct different ideas and plans through the mind. This facility is offered by the Lord to the living entity constitute the 16 kinds of perverted support in terms of the knowledge-gathering senses, the working senses, the mind, and the 5 material elements. The wheel of repeated birth and death is created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but to direct the bewildered living entity in progress toward liberation, according to the varied stages of advancement, different directions are given in the Vedas, Chandomayam. If one wants to be elevated to the higher planetary systems, he may follow the Vedic directions. As the Lord states in the Bhagavad Gita 9.25, Yanti deva vrita devan pitran yanti pitravrataha bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti mam yajnyopi mam. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship ancestors go to the ancestors. And those who worship me will live with me. The real purpose of the Vedas is to direct one back home, back to Godhead. But the living entity, not knowing the real goal of his life, wants to go sometimes here and sometimes there, and do sometimes this and sometimes that. In this way, he wanders throughout the entire universe, imprisoned in various species and thus engaging in various activities for which he must suffer the reactions. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore says, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bija. The fallen conditioned living entity trapped by the external energy loiters in the material world, but if by good fortune he meets a bona fide representative of the Lord, who gives him the seed of devotional service, and if he takes advantage of such a guru or representative of God, he receives the Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed of devotional service. If he properly cultivates Krishna consciousness, he is then gradually elevated to the spiritual world. The ultimate conclusion is that one must surrender to the principles of Bhakti Yoga, for then one will gradually attain liberation. No other method of liberation from the material struggle is at all possible. Translation again. O Lord, so seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas here, we see in this very, very powerful verse, Prahlad Maharaj addressing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, talks about how the mind entraps the living entity through unlimited quantities of desires. Srila Prabhupada in this purport confirms that the whole problem with this material world is a living entity trying to fulfill this unlimited varieties of desires. It's unfortunate that a living entity does not understand that these desires are unlimited. And it is impossible, because the desires are unlimited, anything that is unlimited in any part of this universe cannot be achieved. And similarly, if the desires are unlimited, then how can a person ever satisfy these desires? And because he is trying his level best to satisfy his desires, and in fact because the mind, as Srila Prabhupada translates over here, the mind is always planning how to remain in the material world and struggle for existence. So this is the nature of the mind. The mind which is directing the living entity to continue in the cycle of birth and death, somehow or the other try and get as much satisfaction as possible in this material world. And for what purpose? Only to remain over here. Only so that living entity can perpetually remain in this material world without any hope of being able to go home back to Godhead. So it is so sad that this living entity is trying to fulfill something which is unfulfillable. It's impossible for him to fulfill. And today we see on this planet Earth, the result of what is this unfulfilled material desires. Particularly over the last 100 years, we have been seeing how so-called economic development, so-called facilities for sense gratification, have made the living entity so much entrapped into trying to enjoy this material world that actually he is the cause of his own destruction. And we see countries which are supposed to have such stable economies, which are so powerful, which have been powerful for the last so many years, 100, 200 years, practically on the brink of an economic collapse. And people who thought that banks at one time were supposed to be the safest place where they could keep their money, or where they could entrust their money to, are today caught up in such a fear, because that is practically the last resort that a person, or the most conservative person, would ever want to keep his money would be a bank. And the banks today are actually becoming graveyards where people are just finding that their money, this lifelong earned, hard-earned savings, are just going into thin air. And if you really analyze as to why this is happening, we have to go a little bit back into history. Actually, this whole concept of bank was something that was invented or that was discovered or that was created not more than 300 years back. Even at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's no mention in Chaitanya Charitamrita that there was ever a bank. The king was the person who was controlling the treasury, and he was the person who was deciding how that treasury should be allocated for the welfare of the people. And even the currencies that we see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita are nowhere what we are using today. Currencies in terms of gold, silver. They were using kahanas and kaudis and seashells, basically. So this is about 500 years back. So we can safely assume that 500 years back, there was no such thing as paper money, coins or currencies or whatever like that. So if one traces back in history, I remember when we were in school and we were learning about the history of how this currency notes and coins and all that came into being. The word bank comes from a French word called banc, which actually means a bench. And this money transaction started on this bench. So people, you know, who had a great amount of trust placed upon them by the society or by the local community would be the people who would be every day coming in the morning and sitting on a bench which was placed in a community location. And then people would bring whatever valuable items they had in terms of gold or silver and give it to these people. And these people would in turn give receipts acknowledging that they have received so much quantity of gold or so much quantity of silver. And these pieces of paper would be exchanged for commodities. So this was the beginning of the bank. And because the people who were issuing these notes were completely honest, their integrity was unquestionable. People had complete faith that this paper, which was being circulated around, represented the value that was stated there. If somebody kept, for example, 100 grams of gold, then he would be given a piece of paper which said that 100 grams of gold was given by him. And at any point of time, he could go back to the bank and exchange this piece of paper for that 100 grams of gold. So anybody who comes across this paper could go to the bank or go to this bench where these people, where these bankers would be sitting every day and then exchange this for the gold. And gradually, this developed into a full-fledged banking system. So these people who were actually having this gold with them then would lend out this gold to people who needed it. So that is how people who had more gold started keeping deposits, and the people who wanted gold would get it as loans from this bank. And the system was functioning so beautifully for several years. In fact, over 100 years, there was absolutely no question of any bank failing. Because these pieces of paper were backed up or were supported by solid gold. And gradually, the government started realizing the value of these banks. And over a period of time, the government slowly started controlling these benches, these people who were running these banks. And eventually, the government started also issuing this for the entire nation, one single currency note. But human greed is something that the banking system did not reckon with, even at that time. And this propensity of a human being to consume more than what is available with him actually started taking place about 200 years back, where he would borrow money in order to spend. And the more a person borrowed, the more he would spend. And the more he would spend, the more there would be production. And the more there would be production, more goods would be available. And the whole cycle of economic progress starts turning. So then the government realized at some point of time that this money, what finally became known as money, was so important to the whole development of the economy. And then the government started making various schemes in order to benefit the people, so-called socialistic economies, economies which were very supportive of the people. They started spending money to take care of their people. Pension schemes were introduced. A social economic system started coming into place. But then, in order to maintain the social economic system, people had to contribute by way of taxes. Because how can the social economic system function unless and until the government had money? And the only way by which the government could take money was to collect taxes. So people were working, and those who were working were paying taxes to the government. And in some economics, the taxation rate was as high as 90%. Even in India, for that matter, about 20 years back, the maximum rate of tax was 90%, which meant that if you earn above a particular level of income, something like 5 or 10 lakhs of rupees a year, whatever you earn, 90% was taken away by the government. So there was no inducement for you to earn. Or if there was an inducement for you to earn, there was no inducement for you to pay taxes. So people would earn money but not pay taxes. So that's how the parallel economy started coming up. So-called, what we call as a number two economy. Black money. Because people didn't want to pay taxes. So if you don't want to pay taxes, the only way by which you could do it is to have transactions in cash. So then the government realized that having such a high taxation rate is actually counterproductive. So let's go one step backwards. So where this system started failing was where this government started generating this taxation income and started using it for the benefit of the people. Pensions to those who were old, unemployment benefits to those who didn't have a job, sick benefits to those who were sick. So all this sort of benefits were given by the government back to the people. To such an extent that people started realizing that even if I don't work, I'm going to get all these benefits. So the government has become so liberal in terms of providing facilities to its citizens that people were thinking, why should I work? I'm going to get my basic maintenance. I'm going to get a house. In fact, the government would even start providing a house. If you're out of a job or if you're old, the government would provide you a house. And that system exists even today. If you go to Ireland, Ireland is an economy which, for the old people, the government, if you're not able to afford a house, the government provides you with a house. Government provides you with a maintenance allowance. Government takes care of you when you're sick. You go to a hospital and get yourself treated free of cost. So then where is the inducement for you to work? So the really intelligent person, the so-called Brahmana in this economy, started thinking that why should I work? Of course, they were not engaging in Krishna consciousness, but they were thinking to themselves that there's no need for me to work. I might as well spend my time not doing any work. And the government had absolutely no control over this group of people. And eventually, this system became so expensive to maintain that the government had no other alternative but to borrow from other governments or print its own currency. And because of this, inflation started multiplying. And like we had discussed last time, today, of course, the economic situation has collapsed, is contributed because of the loans that were given by the banks. Over the last so many years, banks were just giving loans to people who had absolutely no ability to pay. And these people who take this money and buy homes, knowing fully well that they had no ability to repay the loans that they had taken for those homes. And then when the situation came that they could not pay up the loan, the bank would take their house back and then put that house into the market. And there would be several houses like this in the market. The market prices for these houses would collapse. There would be no buyers for these houses. And because the bank would not be able to get its money back, because they're not able to sell the houses, the total quantum that the bank could lend would reduce over a period of time. And eventually a situation would come that the bank had no money to lend. And because the bank had, as we discussed in the beginning, the bank had, the whole economical cycle works because the banks have money to lend. And only because they are lending the money is the economic cycle moving. And if that lending ability stops at any point of time, there is a squeeze. There's what is called as a credit squeeze in the market. And the whole economy goes into a disastrous situation. So we see today that this unlimited desires that a human being has could result into so much of anxiety. In fact, I was just reading an article 2 days back that even a small child today is under such tremendous anxiety. What to talk about the middle-aged person who is about to retire? Even a child. 15 and 16-year-old children are committing suicides because they're just not able to cope up with the anxiety. And what is the root cause of this? Unlimited desires, which are just trying their level best to satisfy, but they're not able to achieve. So that is why the Srimad Bhagavatam, through so many characters, is giving us such a hard knock on our head to tell us that when we try to satisfy our desires, we actually land up in misery. And these desires could manifest in any form, not necessarily for money. Could also be for prestige, name, fame, glory. Like we could see in the case of Durvasmuni, a very elevated yogi who could go right up to Vaikuntha in his own body. And he was having such yogic powers. But when he saw that Ambarish Maharaj had apparently made such a small mistake, which according to him was, although Ambarish Maharaj had made a very small mistake, Durvasmuni took it as a very great insult upon himself. And this yogi who actually had this ability to perform such mystical feats lost complete control over himself. And he went to the extent of trying to kill Ambarish, a pure devotee of the Lord. So again, this desire for prestige, power, which is also an unfulfilled desire, manifesting in this particular form. So that is why the Srimad Bhagavatam also gives examples of devotees like Bharat Maharaj. Otherwise, what is the reason for Srimad Bhagavatam to be spending, or Sukhdev Maharaj to be spending so much of time and energy describing the qualities of Bharat Maharaj, who ruled his kingdom for millions of years? He was the king of the whole planet Earth. But then when he decided that now is the time for me to relinquish everything, Srimad Bhagavatam describes that he left as if a person who passes stool leaves it. Absolutely detached. Also Priyavrat Maharaj. Now, Priyavrat Maharaj was actually the heir apparent to the throne after Swayambhu Manu. he meets Narad Muni. Narad Muni preaches to him that the actual goal of life is self-realization. Don't get yourself bound up into this materialistic way of life or being a king. Priyavrata Maharaj goes to the mountains and renounces everything. How difficult it is for us to give up even a little bit of the bank balances that we have, and the attachment that we have to these bank balances. Maharaj Priyavrata, who was an heir apparent to the whole world, whole universe, actually, Swayambhuva Manu, Prajapati, wanted to crown him as an emperor. And Srimad Bhagavatam explains so wonderfully that when the time came after the departure of Uttanapad, Swayambhuva Manu actually had to take over and become the king, because there was somebody required to become the king. But Swayambhuva Manu was not at all interested. He had given up. He was the emperor. He had given up everything and he had retired to the forest. And because circumstances were drawing him back to become an emperor once again, and he had no desires, he thought to himself that the only alternative is to call back Priyavrata. And then he goes to the place where Priyavrata is performing his tapasya and tells Priyavrata that, please, now is the time for you to come back and assume your responsibility. And Priyavrata tells him that, you know, I've got no desire. Just leave me where I am. I'm happy where I am. And then Lord Brahma had to come and preach to Priyavrata. And of course, Priyavrata exemplified a supreme renunciation, because he saw that Brahma was really desirous that he should be taking over as the king. Because he was a devotee of the Lord, he knew that he had to fulfill his responsibility. He should not be attached to something which was not ultimately beneficial to mankind. And he took over as a king. And he ruled the kingdom for over 1 billion years. That is a long time. He got married, several children. And finally, after ruling the kingdom for so many years, realization dawned on him that I should not be continuing over here. And then he goes back into the forest. So these characters in the Srimad Bhagavatam teach us through their lives how important it is for us to be aware that if we try to fulfill our desires, then we'll ourselves land in a miserable situation. And also from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you see from the life of Raghunath Das Goswami, now here was a person who had absolutely all facilities to live a comfortable life. In fact, his parents, his uncle and his father and his mother, they were so much worried about his renunciation that they would keep him practically guarded 24 hours of the day. But Raghunath Das Goswami's desire was, when would the time come when I would be able to get away from all these responsibilities? And his mother came to the extent that his mother told the father that, now I think the time has come to tie him up with ropes. That's the only way by which he'll be able to stay back. And his father told his, Raghunath Das Goswami's mother, that you're such a foolish woman. A person who cannot be held back by the attachments that he has presently of a beautiful wife, unlimited wealth, position in society, name, fame, everything. If you cannot be held back by that, how can you expect mere ropes to hold back this person? So, classic example of a person who lives this untold, unlimited wealth and lives the life of a mendicant, drinking a few drops of buttermilk once in 3 days, going and begging at the Simadwar like a common beggar. But then he knew that this was what was pleasing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was indeed pleased with Raghunath Das Goswami's renunciation. And every time that Raghunath Das Goswami would become more and more renounced, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, heart of hearts, would become so pleased. Yeah. So the supreme renunciation is being taught by all these wonderful devotees of the Lord. Prabhupada, by his own example of living Vrindavan Dham at the ripe old age of 70, which would be an age when people would normally be just living in the Dham. Most people nowadays want to go to the Dham and buy a house very close to Krishna Balaram temple so that they can spend all the time in the temple. We have 24 hours kirtan over there. Most people have a desire to spend the rest of their days in the Dham. But here was a person who at the age of 70 years decided to go to America. Absolutely no support. It was not that he was desirous of going and spending time in America because things are more comfortable over there as compared to the Vrindavan Dham. In fact, when things became worse for him in America, he started telling his disciples that I should actually go back to Vrindavan because I'm much more happier over there. Life is so much more comfortable. Please take me back to India. I want to go back to India. After he got this paralytic attack, he was hankering to come back to Vrindavan because he was not sure whether he is going to leave or not. So Srila Prabhupada, by his own life, taught us that ultimately, at the time when we are leaving our body, we have to be in the association of devotees. And if possible, in a holy place like Vrindavan, surrounded by devotees. And Srila Prabhupada has given us this gift of such a facility through the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. All over the world, any part of the world that you go to, you have facility where you have the association of devotees. But that is the only hope for us. To take shelter of devotees and not to take shelter of a bank. Because the banks nowadays can hardly offer us any shelter. And as the papers are screaming, the newspapers are screaming that there are still worse days yet to come. There are some so-called soothsayers who are predicting that the 1929 depression that America went through is going to be nothing compared to what we are going to experience in the coming months and coming years. So if we were to put faith in the fixed deposits that we have in our banks, the money that we have in our mutual funds, or the gold that we have in the form of ornaments of our wives and so on, if that is what we are to put faith upon, then a time will come when we'll miss out on what is actually the goal of life. So this process of Krishna consciousness, which is given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada, we have this opportunity to somehow or the other get ourselves attached to the association of devotees. Get ourselves attached to Srimad Bhagavatam. Learn from the characters of Srimad Bhagavatam how to somehow or the other try to restrict the unlimited desires that are coming into our heart. And dovetail these desires towards worshipping Krishna, towards serving the devotees. So a devotee in one sense also has unlimited desires. He has unlimited desires to serve the devotees. Unlimited desires to chant the holy names of the Lord. Right? I mean, that should be actually our desire. Kirtaniya Sadahari, to continuously chant. At which point of time we will be ever reaching that situation is something that only the future will reveal. But we finally have to come to that stage where we have an unlimited desire for Krishna consciousness, to make our consciousness all the time encircled around Krishna. Yeah. And that facility is available to each and every one of us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.